Good evening. This is Life Rattle, the story show. I'm your host, Lori Callis. Tonight, on Life Rattle number 1225, we present three more stories from new Life Rattle writer Michelle Catherine Duclos. Michelle Catherine Duclos was born in Toronto in 1991 and raised in the suburbs along with her two younger siblings. Michelle spent her high school years tutoring English, working at a veterinary hospital, and advocating for mental health awareness through an anti-bullying campaign. In university, where she studied politics and writing, Michelle wrote for the sports section of her campus newspaper. She also wrote and designed advertisements and publications for her job at a charity. After graduating from university, she plans to pursue a career in editing and publishing. Michelle Catherine Duclos enjoys reading philosophy, skating outdoors, swimming the Georgian Bay, and watching the Olympics. With a voice both fresh and natural, Michelle depicts three generations of a family coping with the failing health of their grandfather, Jaddick. Her wonderful juxtaposition of youth and old age, humor and sadness, and some ironic twists makes these stories both touching and frighteningly relevant to all families. Tonight's first story brings a blush of humor to a strained situation as Grandma, Bobcha, bolsters her husband's health with a special blend of homemade juice that results in unexpected side effects. Let's listen now as Michelle Catherine Duclos reads her story, Beets and Humber North, tonight on Life Rattle.
Beets and Humber North by Michelle Catherine Duclos. I sit and hold Jaddick's hand in a room at Humber River Regional Hospital in northern Toronto. Jaddick squeezes my hand. He has a strong grip. I try not to wince as his fingers press down hard on a silver ring I wear on my middle finger. Bupcha pulls out a blue container of Nivea cream and opens the lid. She takes a glob of the thick white paste and smears the cream all over Jaddick's face. I try not to laugh as she twists her fingers inside Jaddick's nostrils to moisturize them. It looks like she's picking his nose. "So," she asks me. She has a curious look on her face. "What's wrong?" "Nothing," I reply in Polish. I try to keep a straight face. "But you look like you're picking Jaddick's nose. That's all." Bupcha waves her hand. "He needs to stay moisturized. This hospital air, it's terrible. A person could die of dehydration in here." "Sure." I nod like I understand what she's saying. "It doesn't seem dry in here to me." I shift in my hard steel chair and grab onto the cool metal bed railing and straighten myself. Jaddick's room is tiny. There's enough room for a side table, a hospital bed, and a TV suspended on an arm mounted to the wall. The room makes me feel closed in, even though the walls are painted white, which is supposed to make a space larger. Mom walks into the room with a doctor. The doctor wears a long white lab coat with navy blue scrubs underneath. His name tag is flipped backwards, so I can't read his name. His gray hair wraps around his head like a crown, with a large shiny bald spot on top. "Mama," Mom says to Bupcha, "the doctor said that Jaddick's tests came back negative. He's fine." "I knew that," Bupcha says. "Those nurses at Baycrest know nothing. Jaddick didn't show any signs of being sick. I made sure he wouldn't get sick. I mean, I brought him special juice to drink every time I visited Baycrest." "Juice?" Mom asks. "Yeah, with carrots, raspberries, celery, beets, and garlic." "Beets?" Mom laughs. She turns to the doctor and addresses him in English. "I think I know what happened. My mother gave her husband beet juice to drink. That made his stool look bloody." The doctor chuckles and shakes his head. "No wonder the tests came back negative. I'm glad to know that everything is fine. let your mother know that next time she should tell the nurses that she's giving him beet juice to drink. Otherwise, there'll be many more trips to the hospital. Of course, Mom says. I'll arrange for his release. I heard he's to be transferred to a new home, the one on Rosasville's, the doctor inquires. Yes, a spot opened up, and we agreed to have him transferred to Copernicus Lodge. It's much closer for my mother to visit. And it's a Polish-speaking facility, so it'll create more of a familiar feeling for my father. That's nice. The doctor nods and leaves the room. Mom laces into Babcia. You need to tell the nurses whenever you give Jadek something to drink. They thought that Jadek was seriously sick, but it was the beet juice that caused his stool to look bloody. If it was a Polish facility, that wouldn't have happened, Babcia defends herself. They would have known it was from beet juice. Oh, I'm so glad Jadek's moving to Copernicus Lodge.
That was Michelle Catherine Duclos reading her story Beets in Humber North. In tonight's second story, we see the guileless reaction of children to the cool wheels and odd characters they encounter at the long-term care center where their Jadek now resides. Let's listen now as Michelle Catherine Duclos reads her story, Wheelchair Races and Alzheimer Patients.
Wheelchair Races and Alzheimer Patients by Michelle Catherine Duclos. Ready? Daniel shouts, go! Elizabeth sits in Jadek's wheelchair. She pumps her arms and wheels the chair across the cramped room from the north side to the middle of the room. She twists the wheelchair in a circle clockwise, quickly moving her hands in opposite directions. Then she swiftly backs up the chair to its starting position and looks up. How fast? Elizabeth asks. 45 seconds, I say, looking up from my digital watch. Yes! Elizabeth shrieks. I beat you, Daniel. I beat you. Daniel frowns and clenches his teeth. Not fair. You cheated somehow. Why? Because a girl can't beat you? Elizabeth challenges. No, because I know I went faster, he replies. Whatever. Go again. Elizabeth gets up from the wheelchair. You're never going to beat me. Daniel rushes over to the wheelchair and sits down. Mom walks into the room. Shh, she warns. You're making too much noise. Daniel, come with me. I want you to help Dad walk Jadek. We didn't come here so you could play with Jadek's wheelchair. Daniel purses his lips together, frowns, and then follows Mom out into the hallway of the second floor at Copernicus Lodge. Elizabeth looks at me. Want to try? She asks. Nah, we should probably go help Dad and Daniel, I say. Ugh, you and your grown-up behavior, Elizabeth says, disgusted. Just because you're 16 now doesn't make you an adult. No, but I can drive a car, I point out. You have to wait 2 more years. Elizabeth rolls her eyes. Let's just go. She grabs my arm and pulls me out into the hallway. Dad, Daniel, and Jadek shuffle away from us at the end of the hallway. The pink and blue cotton candy walls make me feel closed in. The only comfortable, non-claustrophobic spot is at the end of the hallway. The floor-to-ceiling window looks out onto the empty street. I can see a blue sedan parked on the other side of the street. A large oak tree grows on the lawn of a house across the street. On this side of the street, a black wrought iron fence runs along the length of the property, separating the senile from the sane. I've seen people cross the street to avoid the sidewalk closest to the nursing home. Elizabeth and I walk towards Jadek. Pani Katarzyna, a small, elderly lady, stands in the middle of the hallway and looks at us. Her white hair sticks out in different directions. Drool slips down her chin from the corner of her mouth. Her eyes show no sign of recognition, even though we see her almost every weekend when we visit Judic. "You," she says, and points to Elizabeth. "Do you know where John is?" John is Pani Katarzyna's son. She always forgets when he visits. She always asks us about him. She asks everyone about him. "He's coming tomorrow," Elizabeth gently replies. "Tomorrow. Okay, Pani Katarzyna?" Pani Katarzyna nods. "It's so hot on this floor," she complains. She reaches down and pulls up her green sweater and takes it off. She pulls up her white blouse at the same time. She isn't wearing a bra. Elizabeth and I look at each other in horror and turn around and run for Judic's room. From the corner of my eye, I see Jessica, one of the staff, rush forward and pull Pani Katarzyna's blouse down. I turn my head completely to look for the entrance to Judic's room. As I do so, I almost run into Vatsuaf, Judic's roommate. "Sorry," I say. Vatsuaf nods and continues walking. Vatsuaf always walks around with a sad look on his face. He has a sad-looking face in general. His translucent, sallow skin gives him the appearance of a ghost. I've never seen him smile. I walk back into Judic's room and see Elizabeth standing in the middle of the room. "Is it safe outside?" she asks. I nod. I saw Jessica pull down Pani Katarzyna's shirt. "Oh, thank goodness. That was traumatizing," she says. "I don't even want to talk about it," I warn her. "Come on," she says. We cautiously tiptoe into the hallway. Pani Katarzyna isn't in the hallway anymore. Jessica must have taken her into the living room. Judic now heads our way. Dad and Daniel turn him around. I see Stepan behind them. He looks annoyed because they're blocking his way. I motion to Dad to move out of the way and let Stepan pass. Stepan thanks Dad and maneuvers his way around them. He sees Elizabeth and me. He waves, and I see a Gospolski newspaper in his hand. Stepan loves reading the newspaper. Mom always brings him a copy of the Gospolski from downstairs. There's a huge stack of free ones on the main floor by the entrance. Stepan would get it himself, but he's not allowed to leave the floor unattended. This is a locked unit for Alzheimer's patients and other residents who suffer from difficult brain diseases. "Hey, what took you so long?" Daniel calls out. "You two took forever to get out of Judic's room." Elizabeth and I look at each other.
That was Michelle Catherine Duclos reading her story, Wheelchair Races and Alzheimer Patients. When the crisis passes, the day-to-day reality of Alzheimer's disease settles in. The grind of coping requires infinite patience and love. A young woman now, our narrator blesses her Judic with both. Let's listen now as Michelle Catherine Duclos reads her story, Routine.
Routine, by Michelle Catherine Duclos. 2 weeks ago, 3:58. Two more minutes and my shift at the Copernicus Lodge Foundation ends. I shuffle the papers on my large mahogany desk. There's a bill from the local chocolate store, a bank statement from the Polish Credit Union, and some notifications of donations from the United Way. I grab a blue pen from the mauve container on the left side of the desk and a pink post-it note. I scribble a note to my coworker Anna. "Please deal with these papers." I look at my messy writing. My E in please looks like a C. I shrug. I push back the black, ergonomically friendly chair that hurts my back and stand up. 3:59. I reach up and grab my black jacket from the silver hooks mounted in the corner of the office. I throw the jacket over my arm and walk to the door. Holding onto the cool metal door handle, I lean back and switch off the lights. The room darkens, but I can still see. I push my right foot underneath the doorstop and flick my foot up. The doorstop lifts. I pull the door closed. I reach for the red lanyard that hangs around my neck. 5 keys dangle off my lanyard. My office key, the administration office key, the storage room key, my grandmother's house key, and a silver key that I haven't figured out a purpose for. A white and green memory stick also hangs on the lanyard. I grab the white access card on the lanyard and pull the lanyard over my head. The punch-out machine reads 16 o'clock. I sigh in relief. I hate waiting. I swipe my white access card across the top of the machine and walk over to the elevators. I punch in the code and press up. The elevator door opens. I step in the elevator and press the button for the 5th floor. On the 3rd floor, the door opens. Barbara, the activation manager, gets on the elevator and the door shuts behind her. "Hi, Michelle," she says. "Visiting your grandfather?" I nod. "That's nice of you to give your grandmother a break. Say hi to her for me." "Sure," I say. The door opens. Barbara walks to her office. I walk to the other side of the floor. There's a large yellow door. I punch in the code. The light flashes green. The door opens. I walk in. The smell of urine, sanitizer, diapers, and humidity hits me. I look into the nursing station on my left. The whiteboard on the door reads, "The nurse on duty is Yulia." I smile. I peek my head into the office. Yulia sits at the desk, working on the computer. "Hi, Yulia," I say and wave. She turns around and smiles when she recognizes me. She pushes a wisp of brown hair out of her eyes. "Oh, hi, Michelle. Nice to see you. Your grandfather is watching TV. I nod. "Thanks." I leave the office and walk towards the TV room. Along the way, I pass the activity room. Agata and Margaret stand inside with a group of residents. Everyone has leis on. I think the theme of the event is supposed to be Hawaiian night, but with a Polish twist, since all the residents sing the lyrics to Hei Sokowe, a traditional Polish song, to Hawaiian music. Patricia, Jadek's neighbor, sips juice out of a coconut cup. Maria, his other neighbor, looks up and waves at me. She smiles a toothless grin. I wave back and keep walking. I turn to the right and see Jadek sitting in his wheelchair. He has his eyes closed, and he clenches his fists tightly. A washcloth peeks out of his left hand. It protects him from developing ulcers on the inside of his hand. I kiss Jadek on the forehead. He opens his eyes. "Hi, Jadek," I say. He looks at me. "It's Michelle," I tell him, in Polish. He stares some more. I stare into his eyes and look for any signs of recognition. I don't see any. "Hey," I hear Marisha's voice behind me. I turn around. "Did you hear about Selena and Joanna?" she asks me. Yes, I did," I say. "It's very sad. I can't believe they're gone." "Selena and Joanna used to live on this floor. Both of them passed away last week. I miss them. I used to wave at Selena every time I passed her room, and she always waved back. Joanna used to blow me kisses as I walked by her wheelchair." "Oh," Marisha says, and dismisses me with a wave of her hand. She enjoys informing people. I already know, so she's not interested in me. I grab the back of Jadek's wheelchair and turn him around. Amy, one of the personal service workers, peeks her head out from inside the washroom. She grins when she sees me. "I'm taking him downstairs," I tell her. She nods her head vigorously, and her blonde hair flaps back and forth. "Will he be back for dinner?" "Yeah, I'm going to feed him." I push Jadek to the door of the unit, punch the code, open the door, and wheel him into the hallway. We go down the elevator to the ground floor. As soon as the elevator door opens, I breathe in deeply. A cool rush of air brushes across my face. I push Jadik's wheelchair out of the elevator. I wheel him to the lounge. I see two flowery sofas, a teak coffee table, a fireplace, and a dozen green plants. Next to the fireplace, two tall bookshelves lean against the wall. Both overflow with Polish magazines, newspapers, textbooks, picture books, and novels. A display case sticks out of the wall beside the right bookshelf. China, dishes, and other ornate decorations lay nestled inside, protected by a locked glass door. Hidden in the far corner of the room sits a medium-sized antique wooden radio set. Quiet classical music fills the room. I push Jadik to the closest flowery couch and sit down on the couch beside his wheelchair. Mitz, the black cat that lives on this floor, crawls out from under the couch and jumps on my lap. "Hey, Jadik, look!" I point out Mitz to him. Jadik isn't interested. He has his eyes squeezed shut. He scrunches his face in pain. I lift Mitz off my lap. I lean down and grab Jadik's left foot. I take off his blue running shoes with Velcro straps, but I leave on his special socks made for diabetics. Jadik isn't diabetic, but the socks have no elastics on them, and they promote better circulation. Jadik doesn't walk anymore, so the circulation to his feet isn't the best. I pull his foot up onto my lap. I slowly massage the bottom of his foot and loosen the muscles. I look at Jadik's face. He relaxes.
That was Michelle Catherine Douglas reading her story Routine. That concludes Life Rattle number 1225. My name is Lori Callis. I recorded Michelle reading her stories. Life Rattle was created by Guy Allen and Arnie Actman. Tune into Life Rattle next Sunday night at 9 to hear more new stories.